Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello everyone, my name is Ryan Stacey and welcome to the Hockey Minds podcast. This podcast is powered by Instat, the leader in video and data analysis. Instat Hockey supports all levels of our game worldwide with video breakdowns and or scouting services. For more information, you can visit Instat on the web at instatsport.com or on Twitter at Instat Hockey. Today I'm joined by Cole Schultz, assistant coach with the Kansas City Mavericks. Cole has a unique background, finding himself in various roles at the NCAA and AHL level before getting behind the bench with Kansas City in the ECHL. His approachable personality and attention to detail go a long way in his success to date, and he also sheds light on some great hockey minds who he has interacted with throughout his career. With that, here is Cole Schultz, assistant coach with the Kansas City Mavericks. The second round is in full swing and the action increases from game to game. This is where the contenders are separated from the pretenders. To give you some skin in the game, DraftKings will be offering free-to-play pools every day of the basketball playoffs, offering players a free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes. That's up to $10,000 in total prizes up for grabs each day, and the best part is it's free-to-play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. You just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. Questions will range from which team will hit the most threes to which team will score first. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings pool page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Cole Schultz, assistant coach with the Kansas City Mavericks. Cole, thanks for joining the podcast.
Appreciate you having me, Ryan.
Definitely. I think it's very exciting to get you on, and I always love ECHL guests or people who are in that position. Just, you know, with my own experience with Newfoundland Growlers, it's always been a league that interests me personally, but we also have an opportunity here to shed some light on your experiences, which have included multiple levels. So let's just start off by learning more about you personally, maybe give some people some background on you, including where you're from, and just talk about playing sports and things throughout your early years.
Well, I'm actually from here in Kansas City, a small suburb just outside of it called Overland Park. Actually got a relatively late start when it came to hockey. I was more so a baseball, basketball guy. And then soccer, of course, because every kid plays soccer. And then from there, my family bounced all around between Massachusetts, North Carolina, and back here in Kansas City. On our move to North Carolina, though, however, we ended up moving in next door to Paul Maurice, who was then the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes and is now with Winnipeg. Really ended up becoming close family friends with them. And that kind of kickstarted the whole loving hockey thing. And it's kind of odd because it starts in a southern market and it's not really necessarily revered as a hotbed, right? But my first ever professional hockey game I attended, that was meaningful because like I went to a Blues Predators game here in Kansas City at Kemper Arena for a preseason, was game three of the 02 Stanley Cup final. It was Detroit versus Carolina, that triple overtime game where Igor Larionov ripped my heart out. But but no, it's that's kind of the catalyst to my love for the game. And from there, I grew up playing in various youth hockey organizations between North Carolina and Kansas City. And then from there, went and played club hockey at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Spent 3-4 years there. And then from there, it's kind of just been a little bit of a whirlwind. Started coaching youth hockey, and it was my senior year, I believe. And from there, it was one of those things where I re-fell in love with the game and coaching and teaching. And there's really two ways to stay in it. And it's kind of become an agent or basically find a way to coach. And I was really fortunate in that Tom Ceratori took a opportunity on someone that candidly was just very green. Got to go be his director of operations and a volunteer coach for him during the 14-15 season. He was kind enough to fly me down to Naples after that, where I linked up with the University of Maine and Red Gendron there. Was able to trigger that into a job. 2 years later, I'm in Stockton, and now 2 years after that, I'm here in Kansas City. So the whirlwind keeps going.
Yeah, the path is surreal sometimes. You really never know where you're going to be the next season. But, you know, people who are successful in the game, they kind of make it work. You always have that next position, and you make the connections along the way. But we'll go through each step, obviously, of your career and get into, you know, all those that you mentioned there. But first, I want to talk about maybe some earlier experiences, just working with camps and youth programs in Raleigh and the early lessons you learned before really going into maybe that next stage of your career.
For sure. Well, I got to thank the Junior Hurricanes a lot. So my senior year, I ended up getting a concussion and I wasn't able to play for the back end of that season. And it was like December 22nd or something when it happened. And with the way the USA Hockey works, you have to have your coaching staff solidified by, I believe, December 31st for them to continue to be on the bench. So they expedited my process to start working with a Bantam team right after that. So I worked in the Bantam travel program for quite a bit of time and had an unbelievable time. It was a great group of kids. It was a great group of parents. And I was very fortunate. And my, 2 years coaching in Raleigh, or 3 years coaching in Raleigh youth hockey, where I had awesome teams, like parents, kids, like everyone had the right perspective on youth hockey in terms of like, we're here to work hard. We're here to have a lot of fun. And we're here to learn life lessons. It wasn't necessarily about like, I need to get this scholarship or I need to go play junior here. Or I need to go to prep here. It was legitimately like you focused on the hockey and the growth aspect of things, and whatever came from it, came from it. So that was huge for me. And I was very fortunate to have a guy by the name of Tim Silcox take me on as his assistant. And then I was even more fortunate 2 years later to have my best assistant coach I've ever had in my life, and Terry Hoey, who I'm still in close contact with today. But he was the best parent coach that you could have potentially asked for, just because he was the one that really outlined all those perspectives and kept all the parents in check. So it allowed me to kind of do my thing and just teach nuance to the game, as opposed to focus solely on wins and losses. And in terms of youth hockey, that's the best experience I probably could have had, just to kickstart all of this.
Yeah, it's always great when you have that early experience, and working with youth programs and youth teams is always a lot of fun. It's something I've been able to do the last number of years. But, you know, with that in mind, your goal definitely, if you want to make a career in hockey, is always making that jump to maybe full-time position or junior college hockey or something along those lines. And your next step would be Bemidji State and working there. So just talk about some of the tasks that you had in your role there and kind of just your entire process in working with the team.
Yeah, so I'll start with the hiring process there. Tom Ceratori did everything he could not to hire me. so it was I was very green, and candidly, there was probably more qualified candidates at the time. But I was really fortunate in that he called Paul Maurice, and Paul Maurice gave me a recommendation on my behalf. And Tommy, like, to his credit, eventually ended up giving me this job. And from there, my main goal and responsibility was pre-scouting and that sort of thing, and just kind of set the table for the coaching staff in order to come in and operate in the way that they needed to in order to make our team as successful as possible. But the other great part about Tom is that he really put me in a position to succeed there. And that started my first week there. He flew in Jeremy Kupal, who's now the video coach for the Edmonton Oilers. He was with the Nashville Predators at the time, and he taught me XOs. Like, he basically just said, hey, whatever you break, they'll fix. So just dive in and go and learn and make mistakes on the computer and, like, download their phone number into your phone right away because, like, you're going to call it all the time. So, like, when he kind of gave me that green light and showed me, like, the basics and foundations to XOs, it was really easy for me to take off. As the year went on, Tom gave me more and more responsibilities in terms of pre-scouting, setting the table with – essentially, this is what they're doing on their power play breakout, penalty kill, sort of stuff like that. And he's a penalty kill guru, so it was just nice to be able to sit in those meetings and kind of learn. And then I got to work really hand-in-hand with Ted Belisle for a little bit in terms of pulling video on potential recruits and prospects and kind of being able to just give them a second look because, like, unfortunately, in the college game, right, like, you've got two assistant coaches. You can only be in so many places at so many times. And there's not like a real scouting staff or anything like that. So my job there was to kind of just alleviate some burdens on them and give them additional film in terms of finding the right prospects to come play Beaver hockey. And so I couldn't be any more grateful to spend a year in God's country, as it's affectionately referred to up there. It's cold. It's really cold. but it was an unbelievable experience and I'll never forget it.
Yeah, no, it's great when you, again, we can get into an opportunity like that and have people who are willing to teach you. And definitely the vote of confidence from Paul Maurice was probably a driving factor there for sure. But ultimately, you went in there and did the work and were able to take on different roles and then continue to develop and grow. And that kind of led into your next position then with Maine. Talk about that position and maybe the overlap in both business operations and hockey operations, and also touch on the importance of being knowledgeable in both areas kind of moving forward. Yeah,
it was a roller coaster, to be honest with you. I was swimming for a little bit when I first got there. So Red Jenner, who just passed away and has been a giant mentor in my life. I can't thank him enough for everything that he provided for me in terms of the hockey analytics side, the video side. Like, he's kind of like one of the original video guys, like with what he did in New Jersey. So he understood the hours that it took and the amount of time and preparation that you needed to spend in order to be successful in this game. And he passed that down to me for sure. And it was wild because essentially, like, for me and working for Red on his video and analytics, like, it's a full-time job where you're working 60 to 70 hours a week. And with that guy's sleep schedule mixed with our assistant coach at the time, Ben Gite's schedule, like, he had two young kids. So he's not doing any work until 9 p.m. And then when Red's asleep, and then all of a sudden, so I'm getting text messages at 9:15 saying, hey, I need this video done for tomorrow morning's meeting at 8 o'clock. And then Red doesn't sleep. So at 3 in the morning, he's texting me and saying, hey, I need this done. And so all of a sudden my hours are all out of whack and all out of funk. And that's just the hockey side of it. And then from there, I had a pretty big hand in terms of our community engagement, media relations, and all that stuff. So on top of the 60 to 70 hours a week that you're putting into video, you're also doing another full-time media job in terms of organizing interviews and being with the marketing team and having those meetings and understanding, like, hey, this player needs to get out in the community more, or we need to do this more here to help push tickets or just form goodwill. And you're kind of just balancing act and a juggling act, and you're trying to find time to just sleep or shut it down or do whatever. And I can honestly say that those 90-hour, 100-hour weeks, like they've prepared me up until this point. So whenever I have felt slightly overwhelmed or anything like that, like you kind of cycle back to it and you're just like, well, all right, if I could survive that and what was going on then, like I can definitely swim through this and tread water for a little bit until things settle down. So it was a crazy experience. It was a wild experience. Like Maine will always be a very, very special place to me. It's where I've met my best friend. It's the life experience that comes from it. You really feel immersed with that. And like, it's like a lot like Bemidji in terms of like, it's such a small knit community that, and it's the only game in town, right? Like in Bemidji, you had to drive 4 hours to get to the cities and like find a professional hockey team, right? Same with being in Orno, you got to drive 4 hours to find the Bruins and there's nothing between Orno and there. Like you're it. And your community feeds off of that. And it was just so cool to just be a part of that mix in terms of like people just going out of their way to try and make your life easier just because you're associated with that jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anytime you can get into a program like that, it's, you know, it can help you in the long run, and definitely a mentor like that who's teaching you all those lessons along the way and teaching you maybe that hockey really and truly isn't a 9-to-5 job. You know, 3 in the morning, sometimes you're going to have to bunker down and do some video work, especially in that line of work. It's a whole nother realm of the hockey operations spectrum, but you know, it definitely prepared you for the grind of the game and those next steps in your career. And soon enough, you'd find yourself in the pro game, this time at the AHL level with Stockton, and the opportunity to work with pro players and add a responsibility and team services was a little bit different. But maybe walk us through the process of joining that team and then touch on that role as well.
Yeah. So the summer after I left Maine, I basically took 2 months. It was one of those situations where I felt that I had reached my peak of growth in terms of what I could provide to the University of Maine and in turn what the University of Maine could provide to me. So I left on really good terms and forever grateful for it. And then from there, going to Stockton, Brad Pascal posted something on a job site. Luckily, Ben Gitte had worked with Jordan Sigalette, who was the goalie coach in Calgary at the time, and I believe he's their director of goaltending now, and put in a good word for me. Ended up talking to Brad P., had a couple of really good conversations with him and Ryan Huska. Ended up not getting the job. it was actually, I got a phone call and was told, hey, we're going in a different direction. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, I get another phone call and they're like, hey, that other situation is not going to work out. We would love for you to come and be a part of it. And it's like, all right, well, now I'm packing my stuff and we're moving to California. So packed my stuff, drove across the country. And the fortunate part about working in professional hockey after working for Red was that a 40-game college season is a cakewalk in terms when you compare it to a 68-game AHL season working for that guy. He prepared me extremely well. The one time that I really felt like I was swimming, though, was when we were in Penticton for our first development camp and literally nothing worked with Exos. Like, it just was one of those weekends where nothing was going to go right for me. And like, so of course, like I'm in a sweat and I'm in a panic and I'm like, great first impression. But luckily Cale McLean took me aside, who was the assistant coach, who's the head coach in Stockton now, and just goes, hey, like, just take a breath. Like, it's going to be okay. And from then on out, like kind of everything settled down and got to stop swimming as much. And in terms of the hockey and analytics side, like I couldn't have been in a position where I could have learned more. Chris Snow, Brad Pascal, like the coaching staff there, they all put me in positions where I could just ask questions and just essentially just be a sponge and take everything in for an entire year. And they were all great about it. Then working with Brad P, I was in charge of about approximately $1 million budget. And in doing so, that just added another tool into my toolbox in terms of like, how do you travel? And like, you have to set these parameters, but you have to make sure, like, yeah, the cost is there and like you get there, but at the same time, are you fitting it within this window? And then once you fit it within this window, it's how close of an NHL experience are you providing to your American League guys, right? Because that's also important. You want to make sure that the meals are comparable. And like, yeah, there's an aspect to the jungle in terms of Like, it's not going to be as glorious. There's a reason why the AHL is called the Always Hungry League and the NHL is called the Never Hungry League. But at the same time, you want to make sure that everything's as buttoned up and tightened up as possible. So when the guys do get that NHL experience, they're like, all right, well, maybe he was doing a better job than what I was thinking in Stockton and all that stuff based off everything that was going on. And I will say this about the Flames in general is they do a good job of making sure that their American League team is well fed, they're well taken care of, they're in good areas, like making sure that everything that comes along with being an American League player, like they're in a place where they're going to develop and move on and go forward. And I was just fortunate enough to be a part of like that organization. And you see how many guys have graduated from Stockton to Calgary with Andrew Mangiapane, Rasmus Anderson, Dylan Dubé, David Rittich, John, like a whole bunch of guys have made it to the NHL, right? So it's awesome to be a part of something where you see how many NHL prospects they're able to turn out. But at the same token, it's awesome to work with just such a great group of individuals and people between Brad and Husk and Kale and Pitter and Joe and Zoo and all the other countless people that I'm forgetting on the support side with everybody. Like, I was just in a very, very good spot in order to help me grow.
Yeah, and sometimes that's half the battle, especially going into the pro game, because like you said, you're sometimes forced to swim or you're thrown to the wolves. But if you have that right staff in place, and once again, the development that you had in Maine in always being ready for a task or kind of working those extra hours, it was a much easier transition. And you continued on that pro game, spent some time with Stockton, really worked on your craft there. And like you said, worked with budgets and got all those responsibilities. And the East Coast Hockey League, as people know, is small staff and there's a lot of tasks and responsibility, again, for people in those positions. And today you find yourself with Kansas City. Maybe talk about the transition to the ECHL and then walk us through your experience with the team thus far.
Well, I was fortunate in that Kyle Hood, who was the previous assistant coach here, him and I had a pretty good relationship. And when we found out he was leaving, there was a spot opening up within our affiliation. So it just seemed to be a natural and symbiotic fit, because the ultimate goal for me was to always get behind the bench of a professional hockey team. So overall, it just kind of worked out in terms of time, place, and all that stuff, right? Like, part of that is just getting lucky with timing. And my first year was definitely hectic in terms of, like, you kind of have to adjust because you're still doing all the travel, you're still doing this, but you're also in charge of the one-on-one meetings, you're in charge of all the pre-scouts, the post-games, like, it gets to be heavy, you know what I mean? Especially, like, and you've got one athletic trainer, one equipment manager, like when you're lucky, some guy, like sometimes you have to have one guy doing both. But luckily, like I was in a position where John Scott took me in and basically gave me the reins on certain aspects of our game and let me just do my thing. And it went really well. From then after that, it was a little bit tumultuous. Like, we were a team that just flirted with 500 throughout the entire year. Right. And I think things had gotten stale and management decided to make a coaching change. And when they did, it was a little hectic. We knew about the change like Thursday at 1:00 and we played the next day at 7:00. So it kind of was like, hey, bring the guys in, tell them at 2:00. And then, hey, Schultze, you're kind of taking this over here. And Brent Thiessen trusted me with that, which I'll be forever grateful for that experience, as much as a whirlwind and chaotic aspect of my life it was. It's something that I don't think you can ever be trained for until you're kind of thrown into that fire in terms of taking a season over. And having that interim coach, like, you really, like, you feel a different sense of pressure. Like, you definitely see it in terms of, like, when you're the assistant coach or the suggestion guy, right? It's a little bit different than when you're the head coach and you're the decision maker and stuff goes sideways. So it's about managing that and that stress and everything like that. But I'll forever be grateful for that quick experience that I had. And then COVID kind of blew that all up, with it did with everyone else as well. So it was definitely a whirlwind. It was definitely fun. And I can't thank my support staff enough, especially Nick Potter, in terms of like keeping me sane throughout that 4-week process before the season came to a close. So Kansas City's definitely been a special place for me, and it's like with my upbringing and growing up here, but to be able to be the head coach of their professional team, albeit for 13 games or whatever it was, it's still a very cool experience for me.
Yeah, still able to say that you were in that position. And like you said, COVID came in and changed the plans, as it has done for pretty much everybody that we've talked with on the podcast, and people listening at home feel the same way. But again, the ECHL is such a unique experience, and you do run into those situations where a quick coaching change can mean that even as an assistant coach, you're thrown right into that position and a small staff. But at the same time, you're still ready to take on that position. And coaching has been something, as you said, was always a goal of yours. And I guess I want to ask you now, having worked up through the coaching ranks, kind of starting off with youth programs and going to pro, and now obviously in your position today, how important do you feel it was to go through those steps? And do you feel like maybe it's something that others should look to do as opposed to maybe just jumping in at a higher level?
Well, I think for me, like, I've got an unconventional background. So for me, the path works. Like, I think everyone has their own niche and own path that they need to carve. I think what was really good for me, though, is I didn't necessarily have that, like, contract experience in terms of, like, well, I'm playing junior this year, and then, like, I'm looking to go to college after this and then go to pro after this. But because of the way that I went from youth hockey to Bemidji, then Maine, and kind of the way that that's gone, I have a very relatable sense to, like, what players go through, right, in terms of, like, there's a nervousness to yourself. Like, you have confidence in your abilities and what you're doing in your current state and where your current place is. But, like, all of a sudden, like, you have to have these thoughts, right, in terms of, like, everyone has goals and aspirations. Mine's to coach in the NHL one day, and I've got to figure out my path to get there. And for me, like, I went to college and I played, right? And then all of a sudden, like, I have my youth hockey experience. From there, I get to go to Bemidji and have a college experience. From there, I get to go to Maine. And then, like, I go to the American League in a certain capacity, right? And so, like, I've kind of had that natural progression that a lot of players go through. And I think it allows me to relate to guys a little bit in terms of, like, hey, it is a grind and you're going to have to eat crow at times. And it's going to be hard. And, like, but if you want it and you want it bad enough, like, and you've set your goal, like, you'll find a way to eventually get there, right? And for me, I think it's been really good to be able to relate to players that way. And for me personally, just to learn, like, it's all different animals, it's all different jungles. But when you get to bring all these different experiences in, it kind of rounds you out as holistically as a coach, what you like, what you don't like, and different aspects of games that you loved and different qualities of the game that you loved and hated. And for me, I'm just fortunate in terms of, like, guys took a chance, and when they did, I made the most of it, right? Like, I like to think of my position in terms of what do I offer a team, and I want to make sure that regardless of what they sign me for, they feel like they're getting return on investment tenfold, right? And because of that and because of my willingness to grind, I feel like I'm in this position now, and it'll continue to open up opportunities for me going forward.
For sure, for sure. And you talk about opening up those opportunities. I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is, even though, like you said, your goal was to be behind the bench, it's always not you don't just get there right away. Sometimes you got to go through the operations or team services. And video was one of those things that definitely played a part for you early on, and I'm sure you still use it heavily today. So I guess just from your experience, was it really your plan to kind of move into that, or was something that you were kind of forced into? And just what were your initial thoughts when video was kind of the main component, maybe early on, when your goal was ultimately to be behind the bench?
I think with my background, it was my only way, to be honest with you. Like, I think I could have grinded it out and coached AAA hockey, right? And then eventually, like, signed with a North American League team or a USHL team and, like, continue to grind it out, wait for an opportunity there, and, like, just continue to progress that way. But for me, like, I think it fast-tracked things for me a little bit in terms of not just coaching, but networking, which is huge in this game, right? And, like, basically, Tom at Bemidji was just up front with me. He's like, you don't have the background that I need to be an assist, like, to be the volunteer coach in the capacity that I need you to, but, like, I need someone to do the video. And, like, I think operations will be your in if, like, you want to do this. And so took his advice and his word for it and just jumped at the opportunity when he gave it to me. And because of that and moving forward, right, like it's been my in, it's been my niche. And because of that, like video, like I'll be indebted to it, right? Because it was my in, it was my foot in the door. So yeah, it's one of those things where I don't think I ever planned on sitting in a room and like cutting a video, like cutting a game when I can be two rooms outside and be in an arena with thousands of cheering people and players and coaches. Like literally it's me and two monitors. Like, but it's kind of what you have to do when you're trying to navigate yourself through this path and just make sure that no matter what, like you're working your hardest so people understand like, hey, when you get that next opportunity or if an opportunity presents itself, like if I take a chance on this guy, regardless if it works out or not, like he's definitely bringing his hard hat to work every day and he's going to be the hardest worker in the room. So it's all, yeah. That's what it all comes down to, right? Is like, you just have to prove to everyone that like you're going to work hard and that just needs to be the forefront of everything that you do.
Yeah, that's a great point. And like you said, when you don't have the maybe the playing background or previous experience in management or coaching, a lot of times that work ethic will be your kind of your meal ticket. And whether video or I've seen guys go through as an equipment manager before going into coaching, there's always different paths. And the path for you, again, it has gone through some different levels. And, you know, college has a different schedule than ECHL and the AHL is different again. So maybe just talk about the process of working in these different schedules. And did your coaching and how much time you allocate to different things change between the different levels as a result?
I mean, I think the college game as a whole, I mean, of course, the schedule is easier. But the thing that you have to manage within that, though, is like these guys are also going to school, right? Like they're studying for tests. They're doing all this other stuff. So, and that's not to say that guys graduate or leave school early and they still do their classes. But like you've got your 4 hours at the rink, but then you've got to invest all this other time in your personal life in terms of school and studying and just having a life outside of hockey, right? So I think that's kind of where the college part gets hard at times on certain teams, where it's just like, man, like it's a grind. But the nice part about college is it's so regimented, right? In terms of like, I wake up, I'm in class from 8 to 10. I'm in class from 11:30 to 1:30. I'm lifting at 2. I'm at practice at 3, home by 5, can make dinner, do some homework, play some Warzone or whatever video game you want to play. And then it's lather, rinse, repeat, right? Like you just continue that same thing. With professional hockey, like you play multiple times a week. Sometimes it's every other day. Sometimes it's 4 games in 5 days. And it's a different grind, right? Like your job then is not just be a student and be an athlete. It's legitimately like you're at the rink for 4 hours, but you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself going forward as to where, like as a player, from a player's perspective, right? I wish I was at the rink for only 4 hours. But you go through it and you're just like, man, like, at the rink for this 4 hours, and then when I go home, like I just got to kind of shut it down, or I got to take a walk, like whatever you got to do to get ready for the next game, right? Because you're playing so often and repeatedly, and just kind of going from there. And then from like the coaching aspect of things, it's like in pro, I feel like the biggest balance is managing guys' bodies, because it's like there's constantly game, it's constant wear and tear of games, it's moving and stuff. And college, I feel like it's kind of managing a kid's mindset more than anything else. Like it's definitely mentally draining to be a college athlete. And it's one of those situations where it's like, it's not saying that people aren't going through things in pro or not having different struggles mentally or doing anything like that. I just think the overall mental fatigue of it, though, just due to the amount of emotional wear and tear of the hours that you're putting in on a day-to-day basis, it's definitely different for college. Like if you're asking me, would I rather be mentally and emotionally tired or physically tired? Give me physically tired every time, right? Like you can rely on your brain to get you through stuff. It's that emotional tiredness and stuff like that I think makes college a little bit, I don't want to say harder, but just different in terms of the toll that it takes on you. But then like the same thing on the mental side for young prospects, right? Especially guys on entry levels. Like, you start thinking, like, I've been grinding it here for 2 years. Like, when is my chance coming up? And I've been fortunate to be able to work with the Flames, and in turn, we have a mental performance coach there, and Matt Brown, and he's been instrumental in terms of giving me perspectives on how to manage players that are going through things like that, and trying to find their niche and their way. But at the end of the day, it's body and mind management, regardless of what level you're at. And it's a grind, and it's just a matter of just picking and choosing your battles, and making sure that you're setting whichever team you are and whatever level you're up for success when it comes time for your game.
Definitely. And I think that's the challenge, obviously, with the game of hockey. You always just want to kind of focus on that common goal and deal with everything as it comes. And whether you're a player or in hockey operations, it's the same way. And I find a lot of times personally, when I get in a situation like that where you need guidance, it's great to reach out to your contacts or people you know in the game. And the people at My Hockey Resource have kind of created a platform to allow people to connect with new people in the game. And whether that's assistant coaches like yourself or video coaches, scouts, equipment managers, just people who are fans of the game, even in some circumstances. So for anyone looking to connect and reach out to new people, be sure to check out My Hockey Resource on Twitter and Instagram. Cole, one of the things they talk about on there is the actual resources that people learn from. Sometimes it could be something like Exos or Sports Code, but it could also be books, articles, conferences, all these different things. So for you personally, what are some maybe resources that you've used over the years that you would like to recommend to listeners?
To be honest with you, I don't read like a lot of hockey centered books, just because I feel like we're in it so often, right, that you kind of tunnel vision your perspective on things. So for me, A Champion's Mind, I think, is a great book. The book Toughness by Jay Billis, it kind of gives you his perspective on Duke basketball, which is painful to say as a Carolina alum, but it gives you really good perspectives on basically how to grind, is what it is, right? And how to push through and how to mentally focus. And then just in terms of resources for me, like, I'm fortunate that I've got all these people that have done these jobs before me, right? And I think the biggest thing that I would recommend to anybody, like, make sure you, when you forge these relationships, like, they're not just surface relationships. Like, I'm very fortunate in the fact there's a lot of really good people in the hockey world, right? And I've been fortunate in terms of forging relationships that allow me to pick up the phone and call whenever I have a question. And that's the biggest thing. Like, you can read and, like, you can see all these articles and stuff, but, like, if you can just pick up the phone and ask, like, people are just an endless source of, like, value and information. And for me, like, that's my biggest revenue stream when it comes to knowledge, is just asking and not being afraid to ask and being willing to sound dumb at times, or being willing to sound like, I don't want to say inept, but just not on the same level as them, just to kind of find a perspective or a different thing. And to be honest, like, a lot of it though, regardless of whether or not you get the advice that you're seeking or not, it does inspire confidence, right? Like, just as a quick anecdote and aside, when I got the interim tag last year, I was like, oh, what are you talking about here? Like, I'm going to be the head coach of a professional hockey team tomorrow night. You're not going to have an assistant coach. You're not going to have anything. Like, it's just you. So me, I'm fortunate. I make two phone calls, right? It's Paul Maurice, who's in the middle of a playoff hunt with Winnipeg. And he basically tells me, hey, like, when you take over a team midseason, find your biggest flaw. And then once you know what the biggest flaw is, fix the biggest flaw. And then a lot of the stuff, like, you'll worry about later. So I'm like, okay, perfect. So that's what I did. Our track was really bad. So all we did, like, the next 3 weeks of practice was line rushes against. And how do we battle it? And how do we go against it? And then the second phone call I made was to Red. And with Red, it was, what do I do? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know what to do here. And all he said to me was, Schultz, are you ready for this? And it was just that air of confidence that he was able to breed in me and made me feel comfortable with my new situation, right? And I don't know if I would have felt that way without that phone call. So for me, like, it's a pretty big deal. So I think that would be my best advice, is just don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call someone that you know loves you, for one, and two, you value and respect their opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's some great advice there. And just, you know, you talked about those two mentors who obviously have had a big impact on you and, you know, have helped you at numerous stages of your career. And in that one situation where you said it was a very quick turnaround and kind of a hectic situation in a sense for you, while exciting for that opportunity, you know, their calming effect, I'm sure, helped and made the transition a little bit easier. And now in a position that you are and in providing that advice, maybe if someone came to you looking to get a start in the game and was looking to see what that first step is or what that one tidbit of advice that you would give for them in coaching specifically, what's that one piece of advice that you would provide?
Well, first of all, my first question back was, what's the goal? You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of guys just say, like, I want to work in hockey. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be a part of it. And for me, like, that was never my goal. My goal is to make it to the NHL, right? Like, and if I don't think if you have that guiding force, like, you're kind of an arrow without a feather and you're just kind of floating around and you don't really have direction. So establish a goal would be the first bit of advice. And then the second bit of advice is, like, take the opportunity that feels right. You know what I mean? Like I've been afforded opportunities in different ways and facets and leagues. And every single time I've just taken the opportunity that feels right. And I think going to a place that wants you is always super important. I think going to a place where you feel comfortable, but you're also going to be pushed is also very important. Right. And to me, that's where all the growth comes from. So put yourself in a position where you're not necessarily comfortable. Go where you're wanted, but not comfortable. Like, go where you know you're going to make mistakes. Go where you understand you're going to learn and grow and everything else. Like, as long as you have that guiding light of your goal and you understand, like, I'm going to grow in this next situation or this next facet of life, like, I think that's the best way to handle it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it as well. And like you said, you can go into a lot of situations, but if you don't have the right mindset, the right goals in mind and the right, you know, situation to really grow your skill set and try new things and put your best foot forward, I think that's ultimately what makes a good situation. So, Cole, again, I just want to thank you for joining me on the podcast today. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, and I know it's a game day for you, so putting in extra hours here when you should be taking some time to rest. But again, I just want to thank you for joining me, and I wish you all the best moving forward.
Sounds good, Ryan. I appreciate your time. And to any listeners, if you want to chat or anything, Ryan, I'm sure he'll post my Twitter handle and Instagram, or feel free to DM and shoot you a number and we'll chat later. So thanks, man.
All right. I appreciate it. All the best.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy.
One thing that fans within the game, hockey minds, and players can agree upon is that when done responsibly, there's nothing better at the end of the day than a cold beer that you enjoy for both its taste and its aroma. And this segment of the Hockey Minds podcast is brought to you by Kitty Vitty Brewery. You can visit their tap room, now open 7 days a week, and their new retail location in St. John's, Newfoundland at 16 Harborview Avenue. If you're one of those people who are maybe looking for some more entertainment, somewhere to sit with friends, you can definitely check out their original location in Kitty Vitty, Newfoundland. Join the Kitty Vitty Craft Club at kittyvittybrewery.ca and give them a follow on social media to keep up to date on the latest brew news. If you're not from Newfoundland and not from the East Coast and you want to get involved, definitely follow them on social media and learn more about their beer, which is great for the casual beer drinking fan and also the beer enthusiast. And stay tuned, because who knows, maybe they'll find their way to get their beer to a location near you. Check out Kitty Vitty Brewery today for more information on their beer, clothing, and all things Kitty Vitty Brewery. I'd like to again thank Cole for joining me on this episode and talking about his career and the various roles that he's held to date. It's not very often you see someone move to the AHL so quickly without an elite playing background, and Cole's story shows there are many ways to move into hockey operations if you're simply willing to put in the work. If you would like to get in touch with Cole to learn about his experiences, I encourage you to reach out to him directly, or you can contact HockeyMindsPodcast@outlook.com and I can help make that connection for you. Next on the podcast, I'll be joined by Luke Strand, head coach and president of hockey operations with the Sioux City Musketeers. Luke brings a wealth of knowledge to the table in terms of management and even scouting, having worked in positions from AAA all the way to the NHL, and it should generate a great conversation on hockey operations for our listeners. Once again, thank you everyone for listening in and helping to spread the word about the podcast as of late. There's a lot going on in hockey with playoffs and all these different things, but as we speak, we hope to continue to grow steadily and share more stories moving forward. As always, stay safe and all the best.